Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Today my guest is Mario Vargas Llosa, whose most recent book is The Bad Girl from Farrar, Straus & Giroux. His earlier novel, The Feast of the Goat, is available in paperback from Picador.
Today, taping at the Museum of Television and Radio in Midtown Manhattan, I am here to talk with Mario Vargas Llosa about what I call After the Boom. We had an extraordinary period in which the literature of Latin and South America entered the world stage. Some of it caused by the fact that books that had previously been published in one country only were published in Spain and then available throughout South America, creating the consciousness of a continent. Isabel Allende has told me that hers was the first generation that grew up reading the literature of the continent. And it altered, there was a kind of vast shift of consciousness, probably astonishing, as writers realized that they had had similar experiences in their formative consciousness, in their relation to culture and power. I mean, what an incredible source of collective consciousness. The sense now is that writing has gone back to a nascent stage. And I wondered how that happened.
Well, I think what has happened is that in the, let's say, in the 60s and the 70s, the world, or at least an important part of the world, discovered Latin American literature, discovered that Latin America didn't produce only dictators and terrorism and civil wars, but also very interesting literary books, poems, short stories, novels. And this was a discovery that was, of course, very, very important for Latin America, because Latin American writers started to be translated and read widely. But this is not news anymore. Now we know that Latin America can do also this, to produce interesting books. And probably this has diminished the curiosity, the interest of the rest of the world for Latin America. But my impression is that it has not been a decline, a dramatic decline in literature in Latin America after the boom. No, I would say that probably today there are as much writers as before, and something even more interesting, certainly much more readers than in the past. Because one of the sequels of what was called the boom was an extraordinary development of the reading audience in Latin America. Now books are, well, still many people that don't read, but there are much, much more readers than in the past, since, let's say, the last 30 years. So young writers today have an audience that we didn't when we started to write. We were, at that time, in a certain way, condemned to a kind of underground life because the smallest of the reader audience.
Now, it is sometimes said that the present generation of writers is a generation without fathers. They are, as is true of any new generation, they are killing the fathers, but the fathers have not been there. Many have lived in exile. Many have left their native countries. A generation, in a sense, unshepherded into publication and recognition. I think normally the case is that, at least in America, the generation of senior writers introduces and even paves the way for a new generation. In part, it's the way writers ensure their literary reputations by having their proteges and the young writers they admire indebted to them. What is it like, though, to have to invent writing afresh, generation by generation, as the writers, for political reasons, for personal reasons, move away from their homelands?
Well, I think this is something that has been happening in Latin America for a long time. You know, I think when I was young, for example, of course there were in Latin America older writers, but we were against them, not only for generational reasons. It's a normal that a generation reacts against the previous one in order to affirm its personality, but also because we didn't share the artistic values that had been, you know, governing, let's say, literary production in Latin America. For example, regionalism, indigenism, this kind of populistic literature. We were against. We were very critical, you know, of this literature that seemed to us very superficial, purely folkloric, you know, and very indifferent to artistic problems, literary experimentation, the structure of the literary text. So we had to find our fathers, our ancestors, and that was a great encouragement to read other languages, to search in other countries and in other cultures the models that we wanted to follow. And this, I think, was very, very good for Latin America because of that, our literature was not parochial, was not provincial, had largest horizons. And so probably what is happening now with the young Latin American writers is more or less the same. They don't want to follow the path of the previous generation. They are, for example, in general, very critical of what was called magic realism, this literature of imagination, of fantasy. For example, and some time ago, a book was published, a very interesting book, which is a kind of manifesto. It's called Macondo, for Macondo of García Márquez, no? The mythical place of García Márquez, 100 Years of Solitude. And it's a selection of texts, short stories mostly, which are absolutely against magic realism. They said, well, we don't want to write a literature that is not deeply rooted in the real world, in the real Latin America. And in the real world in Latin America, there are no fantastic beings, fantastic... No, but problems which are very sordid and very cruel and very dramatic. And on the other hand, we don't want to be known because we are colorful. No? We detest the picturesque. You know? It's very, very interesting. It's a kind of defense of realism as a way to defend a personality very different of the previous one.
Yes, what I think about is that when I started reading Spanish literature in school, in, let's say, 1967, 66, the books that I was given to read, assigned to read, included Blasco Ibáñez's La Barraca, Platero y Yo, Jiménez, very different books, but at the same time, very given to ordinariness. The Blasco Ibáñez to a daily life ordinariness, the Platero y Yo by Jimenez was a poetic prose version of the ordinary life of a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, these new books occurred, and it was almost as if all of those who in America were studying Spanish rather than French were vindicated, because along came the assignments of Borges and Cabrera Infante, mm-hmm. and my guest Vargas Llosa, and Fuentes, and García Márquez, and we were cheering. It seems almost impossible that the new generation should want to go back to what we used to joke as the Acequia novel, the novel about drainage.
Oh, well, no, I. It wouldn't be fair to say that they are doing this kind of Acequia literature that was done in the past. No, not at all, no. But what is interesting is that they are reivindicating, let's say, realism. I know that this word has many interpretations, but realism in the sense that they don't want to write fantasy literature, literature of purely an imaginatory world, no? But they want to invent stories, settle in a world that seems to be the real one. It's not naturalism, it's realism, but it's a realism that is not populist. It's a realism...
Oh, really? Not populist?
Oh, it's not populist. No, on the contrary, they are... well, many of them, they are very much interested in form, in the form, in exploring different ways of storytelling. They experiment with time. No, it's a literature which is very serious and rigorous, but rooted in real experiences and in real life. So it's a new kind of realism. I think it's, in a way, quite normal, because although not all writers of my generation wrote magic stories, you know, magic realism was more or less the trend more new about Latin American literature, and they, the younger generation, is rejecting this because this is the way in which they can affirm themselves and not to appear like mere epigones. Huh?
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from KCRW. I'm talking with Mario Vargas Llosa, author most recently of The Bad Girl, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Mario Vargas Llosa about the effects of El Boom, magic realism and its relatives, on the literature of Latin America.
Now, in your novel, The Feast of the Goat, the story is told of 30 years of the Trujillo administration in the Dominican Republic. It's being told as a kind of allegory of the present. In other words, the past is being used as a symbol to remind people that what is happening now happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Is the book a prolegomena to action?
Well, if the book is successful, it should be that, exactly. At least in this sense, if the book achieves its aim, readers of the book are supposedly better prepared to defend themselves against the threat of something like this. They should know already what represents for a country, for a society, and also for individuals, for families, for private life, a regime in which force and blackmail and fear organizes life. So in the sense, yes, I think a book like this should help people to take decisions and to act.
Because it occurred to me that in its insistence on the realities of Trujillo's cruelties, his humiliations, events that are quite convincing and grow like a stain throughout the novel, events that we hear about in Trujillo's own offices, as well as in the Chevrolet of the waiting assassins, as well as in the memory of the violated woman. Mm-hmm. The book is enacting, it seems, a refusal of the fictional, mythic dictator and forging a kind of naturalism of the history of cruelty in the desire, perhaps, to repudiate the magical realist dictators of the last 30, 40 years of South American fiction. So have you been taking this turn toward realism?
Well, I think I have a natural disposition towards realism in literature. But in this case, I think more than in my previous novels, because I thought that what was important in Trujillo was not the fact that he became almost unhuman, a monster, but exactly the opposite, that he was a human being at the beginning, transformed into a monster but by the power that he accumulated. And he accumulated this power only because he had many accomplices in his society. Many, many people abdicated the power to resist something like this and helped him to become, you know, a dictator with total power over society. And it is because of this that he became the inhuman being that he was in the last years. So what I wanted to describe in the novel was exactly this process of dehumanization of a dictator because of the or servility, of adulation, of cowardice, of many, many people who could have resisted him at the beginning and that didn't. No?
As a reader makes his way through the Feast of the Goat, there's an awareness that this has been a history of terrorism and of bribery and takeovers, conspiracies, hidden atrocities. And I'm struck by the title Feast because in many ways the book seems like a nightmarish celebration of the dark side of the human spirit. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask about that because in many ways that tradition of feast literature, Bakhtin talks mm-hmm. about Rabelais in that sense, where the demoralized and degraded body becomes a celebration site for all kinds of possibility. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you about that.
Well, in Trujillo, of course, there was not only this appetite for power, cynicism, some charisma. But there was also this love for theater, for representation. He acted, you know, as the director of a great show. And the Dominican Republic under his regime was also this, a kind of opera, a farce, an extraordinary farce in which the whole population participated under the direction of this extravagant man who, for example, made his elder son, Ramfis, a colonel of the army when his son had only 9 years, and a general when he was 11, in a public, you know, military ceremony with the participation of thousands of people. You know, this theatricality of the regime, you know, I think is encapsulated in the title, Feast of the Goat.
So is this, in a sense, a refinement of magical realism, where instead of seeing things as a fantastic efflorescence of imagination, instead we see a self-theatricalizing society? The dictator here is naming his children after characters in Aida. There is the sense that if one wanted to understand magical realism as reality, you know, the joke went of Garcia Marquez, all you do have to do is come down here and you would see magical realism is everywhere. But it sounds like the truth is closer, that there was an operatic living out of personal history and destiny that allowed for this extraordinary sense of a banquet in the midst of terror, you know, a kind of celebration of the lowering of human standards, while at the same time a raising of the public heroic nature, almost as if the dictator was to be an operatic conquistador.
Exactly. Well, I think this is a very accurate description of what was the Trujillo regime, you know, this kind of sinister, macabre show in which cruelty, brutality, degradation was mixed with farce, with representation, with this kind of grotesque exhibitionism of the worst aspect of human life. I think this was what was very characteristic of the Trujillo regime. It is the case of other dictatorships too, but I think in Trujillo, this was pushed to an extreme, practically without precedence, at least in Latin America.
So to round the circle, would you say that this younger generation, repudiating magical realism, is also trying to address the self-theatricalizing gestures and say, no, no, we're interested in a certain kind of sordid truth. We will not participate anymore in the literature as carnival that preceded us. We want a different kind of representation for this reality.
Yes, and I would add something. The importance of humor in the literature of the new generations in Latin America. Humor has become very, very common and is used widely by young writers, which is new in our literature. In the past, I remember, for example, when I was young, I had the idea that too much humor was dangerous in literature because humor could banalize, you know, literature. I think I was wrong, and we were wrong if we thought this. But young young writers now, on the contrary, think that humor is a very, very important ingredient of a literature which that wants to be in the real world, but not be a superficial and picturesque kind of literature, a literature with ideas, a literature that would describe, you know, living problems. They are using humor with a great easiness, something that is, I think, is quite new in Latin American literature.
What kind of humor would you characterize it as? Is it satiric humor, sarcastic humor?
In a way, yes. In a way, it's very satirical and black humor, the kind of Buñuel humor.
Ah, yes.
I think this has created a pattern that is very much followed. But also very subtle humor to give a comedy air to some stories. In this sense, I think there is something new in young writers, because humor was a very infrequent presence in Latin American literature in the past.
I've been speaking with Mario Vargas Llosa, author most recently of The Bad Girl from Farrar, Straus & Giroux. His novel, The Feast of the Goat, is available in paperback from Picador.
We've been speaking about the current trends in Latin American literature, particularly in the light of the generations that preceded them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
We are broadcasting from the Museum of Television and Radio in Midtown Manhattan. We express our gratitude to the museum. Our audio technician today has been Chip Cristarella. Our associate producer is Melinda Siegel. My name is Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
Take you across the sea and down along a trail that never ends. To the jungles you can go in books. To the land of ice and snow in books. As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages, back to days of old when knights were bold in books.
Books, 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 books. Books. Books can be funny too.
Books make you laugh and sing.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Back to days of old when knights were bold in books.
Books, 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 books. Books can be funny too.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.